Separating the policy from the politics, delving deeper into what is happening in our world today, and sharing the information you may not know if you didn't listen to this show. iHub Radio presents The Lovable Liberal. This is the Anita Rufus Show, civil discourse on current events and politics. Here's Anita.
And thank you so much for joining me. This is Anita Rufus, The Lovable Liberal. And I'm in a good mood today. I've got a high energy considering that it's like 140 degrees outside here in the desert. Okay, it's not that hot, but it might as well be. The good news is both California and New York are virtually open again. California is doing really well. And as I mentioned last week to those of you who were listening, even though the governor of Florida keeps saying, we didn't have to close everything down like they did, and we did just fine. Well, they may not have done as fine as we did, but more important than that, our economy is stronger than Florida's, in spite of the fact that they were letting businesses stay open and capacity crowds in bars and whatever. Governor Newsom is making the rounds on some of the late night shows and getting heard because of the way he handled this, because of how well the state's doing, and most importantly, and too many people don't even know about this, with this recall election supposedly coming up where it's going to cost us millions of dollars to put on an election where he would be up for election next year anyway. See, the Republicans think if they can get him recalled in a special election where not very many people show up to vote, then they have a chance to get a leg up on California politics because they are so frozen out of California politics. Anyway, Newsom has been making the rounds, and he is really charming. He is so California. He's got a good sense of humor. As a politician, he is glib, and he has overseen, he didn't create it, but he has overseen a budget surplus in this state unlike anything we've ever seen. Enough money to be able to start to really put money against issues like homelessness, where we don't have to tax anybody to try and fix some of the problems. That's the beauty of a budget surplus. On the virus, I just want to bring you up to date. Unvaccinated people are ending up in hospitals. This is not over yet. And, you know, as many as 600 people were in this one hospital at North Shore University on Long Island in New York, as many as 600 during the peak of the pandemic. And now there are very few patients. However, there are three patients in the intensive care unit, and they have one thing in common. They're unvaccinated. And this trend is being seen at hospitals all over the country. Now, another good reason to get vaccinated, I talked about this last week, this variant. And if you'll notice, in order to avoid the kind of crap that people got into when Donald Trump said, oh, the China virus, it's from China. And people went out and started bashing people who looked Asian, regardless of where they were from. But in order to avoid this problem, the UK variant, which popped up last year, is now being called the Beta COVID. And the Indian variant that has been ravaging the country of India is now being called the Delta variant. So we don't have to get upset with people who appear to be Indian. And so that we can talk about this in some kind of a rational way. The serious thing is this variant, this Delta variant, It is more infectious. It spreads more rapidly. It is serious when it hits. And those who are unvaccinated are very vulnerable to this and to passing it along to each other who are also unvaccinated. An analysis of almost 2 million virus patients found new issues in about a quarter of them, even those who had had the virus and now have antibodies. They are most commonly still suffering from pain in nerves and muscles. And if you've ever had a nerve pain, I don't have to tell you what that feels like. They're having breathing difficulties. They're experiencing high cholesterol. They feel fatigued and with a general sense of malaise. High blood pressure. All ages. This is another reason it is so important not to put off getting vaccinated. Now, I know there are some people still saying, well, but you know, it was done on an experimental basis because it was a state of emergency. I want to wait until it's fully approved. Get over yourself. Over 90% capability of stopping the virus, or at the very least, making sure that if you do get it, it's really a mild case. But you can give it to those who are not vaccinated. There's all this stuff about the origin of the virus, with clearly a push to try and find a way to hold the Chinese responsible for having developed it as a weapon in this lab in Wuhan. A top virologist named Shi Zhengli gave a very rare interview. He's one of the top virologists in China. And Shi. And speculation about her lab in Wuhan, she said it was baseless. But nobody believes anything that anybody says when they're coming from China. At what point do we choose to believe each other and move on? I get the idea of trust but verify. I even get the idea of what President Biden said, which is verify and then you can learn to trust. I get all of that. And I get that it would be great politically on the international political stage to find out whether the Chinese are trying to put together some kind of a weaponized virus. As if we might not also still be doing the same thing in our labs. Why else would we suspect that? My feeling about it, with 600,000 plus dead just in the United States, and with a lot of states, especially congregated in the south of this country, where for either political or conspiracy or religious reasons, whatever the justification is, those are states where the numbers are still going up, where they have only 30 to 35% of their population vaccinated. This thing is here. And if we're going to stop it effectively, we need as many people as possible vaccinated so that they can't get it and can't pass it on. Now, very quickly, I also want to hit on Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci. They now have, you know, T-shirts and all kinds of websites that are screaming, "Fire Fauci! Fire Fauci!" Last year, in writing to an epidemiologist who accused public health officials of appeasing Donald Trump, Fauci wrote, "I genuflect to no one but science and always, always speak my mind when it comes to public health." This is a man who has served in both Republican and Democratic administrations. As I recall, he's not even registered with a party affiliation. He's not a political animal. He is, however, all about the science, as it evolves. The people who are taking him to task now because he wasn't a seer who could see into the future and know everything we were going to discover about the virus that we didn't know in the very beginning. If that's a reason to fire him, I would hold that most of the people who want him fired probably couldn't hold on to their own jobs if that's what happened. You can go just so far with this political polarization. But really, even if you have someone in your circle of friends or family who has these kinds of feelings toward whatever has been politicized to think about this virus or about the vaccinations or about Dr. Fauci relative to Donald Trump, whatever all of that is, when you're trying to have a conversation with one of those people, you need to ask them, what do you want the bottom line to be? When over 600,000 Americans have already died from this, isn't it worth at least taking that into account?
Well, I don't believe all those numbers. They are made up, you know, anybody who died over the last year and a half, they're saying it was COVID.
Actually, no, they're not. There's a whole lot of people who died from cancer, from heart attacks, from other disastrous diseases. Did you not believe it when you saw the pictures from New York last year, where they had so many dead bodies coming out of hospitals that they had to put them in refrigerated trucks because they had no place to take them? You didn't believe what you saw? And that isn't enough to convince you? Now, I will say there's somebody in my life who provides services. I'm not going to mention what she does for me, but it's something minor and it's something that makes me feel good, and I do it every week, and you can make your own decision about what that might be. But she's still wearing a mask, even indoors in the salon where she works, and it has now a sign on the door as a result of California now being back open. The sign on the door says, if you are fully vaccinated, no mask necessary. And she's still wearing a mask because she hasn't gotten a vaccination. Because she honestly believes that in the odd chance that she might get the virus, hydroxychloroquine would cure her. Because she once heard this woman doctor in San Diego who swore that hydroxychloroquine was the thing that would get rid of it all. And she just thought it was terrible that everybody was trying to make President Trump look bad by not endorsing and accepting that kind of science. Well, you know what my answer is? Keep wearing that mask, kid, so I don't have to worry. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, and you're listening to iHub Radio.
She's lovable, she's liberal, and she's here to bring a tone of civility to political discussion you aren't likely to find anywhere else. The Anita Rufus Show, with your lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
So I want to talk about the biggest story this past week, although there were several big stories, to be honest. But the biggest story was the fact that President Biden went overseas for the first time in his presidency. And he's only been in there for, what, 4 months? 5 months almost? And he had a meeting with Vladimir Putin of Russia. And perhaps more important, he solidified our relationship with NATO, with the G7 leaders. You know, there's always been, and I can understand why there are some areas of the world that really resent what we have always known as the West. And in some ways, the West are the leading economic nations that are English-speaking. Because the truth is, China has a hugely burgeoning economy, and they have, through their communist system, managed to raise millions of people out of poverty into a middle-class lifestyle. And they are developing technologies, and they are pretty unscrupulous in what they're willing to steal from everybody else to make it look good from them. And there's upsides and downsides to all of that, but they don't speak English, so they're not part of the West. Russia's not part of the West, although they were at one time in the G7. It was the G8. And Donald Trump wanted to put Russia back in the G8. But the other nations had thrown Russia out as penalty, as sanctions for some of the crap they were into in invading part of Ukraine and literally taking over Ukraine's territory known as the Crimea. You don't get to do that anymore. You don't get to just overrun somebody's border and take their territory. Those times should be behind us. And that's why they threw Russia out of the G8, made it back to the G7. And once again, it is primarily this group of progressive democracies, economic powers that are English-speaking. Now, the truth is there are other nations that are also English-speaking, but they're not quite as big or as sophisticated or as large a force in the world, you know, like New Zealand or whatever. The big thing was that after President Biden met with the G7 and then went to NATO and reaffirmed our commitment to the other NATO nations, this is a common defense organization, the North Atlantic, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. That's what NATO stands for. And it was put together after World War II, and this is a way for, again, the Western nations primarily, to be able to make the commitment to stand by each other if any of them are ever threatened by other nations, which is part of the reason that former Soviet satellite nations want to get into NATO, and NATO's still kind of dragging its heels about expanding too much farther until they know for sure that the nations they're letting in are truly committed to NATO's principles, because any nation in NATO has a commitment to every other nation in NATO to respond when one of those nations is attacked. That's what those nations did on 9/11 when we were attacked. Okay, after NATO, Biden went to have his meeting with Putin. And I want to start off by taking issue with the media. This was not a summit. I've lived through a lot of really good American-Russian summits, and this was not a summit. This was a meeting. And the media's hunger for ratings by playing this up as big as possible and calling it a summit. And what is this summit going to resolve? And are we going to have agreements? Yada, yada, yada. This was a meeting between two leaders, the new president of the United States and the president for life of Russia, to try and achieve some way of having better relations that are built on principles that we are willing to stand up for. Donald Trump had a great relationship with Russia, but he didn't have any principles. So President Biden and President Putin both expressed the desire to have better relations. And they did agree to return ambassadors to each other's countries, which had been cut off because they were playing tit for tat about some of the stuff that the Russians got up to, like interfering in our elections. They made very little progress in disputes over cyber attacks, but Biden gave Putin a really good veiled threat. He basically said, hey, if you don't get control over these people within your own borders who are cyber attacking us and playing around with how to cut into our crucial services, we can do that too, you know. And Russia has very much more limited critical systems that could be hacked into and really cause damage. We can do it too, nah, nah, nah.
In a land so divided, she's a uniter, not a divider. This is the Anita Rufus Show, featuring the lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
So I've been talking about Biden-Putin meeting. I refuse to call it a summit. Let me tell you what a summit is. Brian and I just had this conversation off the mic. A summit is when the representatives of both sides or all sides in what hopefully will become a major agreement of some kind, international agreement, when the representatives from all sides have already negotiated what it's going to be, and the leaders get together at a summit to agree that this is what they are all willing to commit to and then sign it. That's a summit. This was a meeting. Meanwhile, one of the biggest little tiny details that I just love about that, Vladimir Putin has a history of being late for every meeting he has with world leaders. He was late when he met with Trump. He's been late for every other president he's ever met with. Vladimir Putin was on time for this meeting. Go figure. I want to tell you that on the world stage and the way these games are played, that was a sign of respect. He was getting a meeting with the new president of the United States, getting recognized on the world stage as somebody important enough for that. And even though Donald Trump, no less than Donald Trump, was trashing Biden for giving the props to Vladimir Putin by meeting with him. I mean, seriously. What did Donald Trump do for Kim Jong-un from North Korea? Talk about giving props to somebody who didn't deserve it. Biden said of Putin, I think the last thing he wants now is a Cold War, which is good because we don't need a Cold War. We need cooperation where it's appropriate, and we need clear rules where if they're broken, there are consequences. And there are lots of little ways that Russia and the United States play games with each other. So let's at least recognize that. By the way, that's one of the reasons why it is so important, especially in international relations, to hire people for these key positions who know what the hell they're doing, who know how to play on that stage, who have some experience. Under orders from the Kremlin, before this meeting, this is the games that were being played before this meeting. Under orders from the Kremlin, the U.S. Embassy in Russia had to stop employing Russians, which forced the embassy to cut its staff by about 75% and limit lots of the services it provided because Russian employees were doing a lot of the, you know, paperwork, answering phones kinds of jobs. Because of the cuts, the embassy was forced to offer only limited service like life and death visa applications. Russian businessmen, exchange students, romantic partners weren't able to get visas because they had to go to the American embassy to get them. And the American embassy, because it wasn't being allowed to employ Russians, didn't have people to push all the paperwork and answer the phones. Last month, President Putin called for creating a list of unfriendly countries whose missions could be banned from hiring Russians. Let's not give Russians a chance to work. The list, by the way, of these countries that could not employ Russians included the United Kingdom, the Ukraine, Poland, several other European countries. But it was the United States for whom the ban was first being enforced. Now, of course, this all followed the fact that we had put sanctions on Russian interference as a result of their mess with the 2020 presidential election and putting their fingers in, and their involvement in that SolarWind hack of federal agencies. Meanwhile, with this going on, these little games back and forth, and not really talking to each other about the things that need to be resolved, students couldn't get here to study. Fiancés couldn't get here to marry. Citizens of America who were in Russia working in whatever capacity couldn't register their children to bring them to the States. If their children had been born in Russia, but they were American citizens because of their parents. This is what these kinds of games can result in. And for those who don't believe all the stuff about the election, oh yeah, they keep blaming Russia. It could have been Italy with satellites changing votes in machines. I just want to share with you, there are two concepts that we have been hearing a lot in the last couple of years, but they seem to get conflated with each other as if they meant the same thing. So just hold this in your brain when you're listening to all of the spewing of attitudes. There's something called misinformation, M-I-S, misinformation. That means the information is wrong. It's erroneous. And we get misinformation from our mainstream press all the time because they don't bother to make sure they have two sources to check everything they hear, or they're taking rumors from somebody who appears to be a whistleblower. Misinformation is just wrong and needs to be corrected and can be corrected. Disinformation, D-I-S information, is deliberately misleading information. It is meant to evoke a response and is not necessarily based on anything that's true. I will remind all of you, if you haven't done it for a while, or you got lazy about it, or you're just used to this, you know, the Facebook pages that you like, or the Twitter or Instagram places that you like to get the latest, just remember there is this place online called Snopes, S-N-O-P-E-S, Snopes.com. For years now, they've been looking into a lot of these stories that just get plastered out into the ether to check whether they're true or not. And Snopes has an incredible reputation for giving you the straight scoop about what is and is not true. Now, there are other things going on in the Biden administration that are worth paying attention to. President Biden has named some ambassadors, one to Israel, to NATO, to Mexico, and to Costa Rica. And I love this. President Biden appointed Sully Sullenberger. Remember who he is? C.B. Sullenberger, the pilot who successfully landed the plane in the East River. Excuse me. It is so hot. My throat is so dry. Sullenberger was named to serve as United States representative to the Council of the International Civil Aviation Organization. Don't you love it? Now, Biden's overseas trip already has made a difference. NATO leaders definitely locked arms, identifying China and Russia as the nations that need to be monitored. Biden reaffirmed his commitment to NATO. Israel has a new government, so they're trying to repair their relationship in America because Donald Trump got so cozy with Benjamin Netanyahu, who is still saying he's coming back into power because the whole thing was a put-up job. It's funny how much he and Donald Trump seem to be reading from the same playbook. Russia is going to supply Iran with advanced satellite systems, and this is another one of those issues where we need to pay attention and may need to get involved. The deal would deliver to the Iranians a Russian-made satellite equipped with a high-resolution camera that would enhance Iran's ability to surveil the entire Middle East region, allow monitoring of facilities ranging from the Gulf oil refineries to Israeli military bases. This, by the way, is yet another reason why we should be renegotiating to put the Iran nuclear controls back in place. And we need to be very clear with Russia that taking sides in the Middle East is as foolish for them as it now appears to be for us, because we're pulling out of a lot of our involvement in that area. Biden's approval rating has dropped, by the way. You know, he's been having such huge poll numbers. And support in April for Biden was at 54%. If you'll recall, Donald Trump never even got to 50. Well, Biden's support has dropped now to 48%. 85% of Democrats are still supporting Biden, but that's down from 95% in April. Independents, 47% of independents supported Biden in April. Now it's 36%. But this is interesting. Republican support for Biden was at a horrible 11% in April, and it's up to almost 20%. What the hell is that all about? In this poll, I have to say congressional Democrats did not do well at all, which is another reason why I am pushing this slogan for the Democrats to run on in every state in the union in the midterm elections next year. Send a message. Because Americans in general are supporting the president's priorities. So they're not happy with him right now, and I think part of the reason is because they are so unhappy with Congress, and they wish he was pushing things through Congress more effectively. But 68% of Americans support his American Jobs Plan. 61% support the American Families Plan, which would invest in health care and child care and education. This is big stuff, and they need to find a way to get it through Congress. But their majority is so slim, and that's why in the upcoming election next year, we need to send a message. Mitch McConnell suggested that if they take back the Senate next year, he might block Biden from filling any Supreme Court seat that might be open for the last 2 years of a Biden administration. That's what we're fighting. Send a message.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Talking about Joe Biden, his administration, things he's already getting accomplished, changes in his poll numbers, the disgust with Congress all across the political spectrum. But I want to emphasize one of the things that I try and highlight on every show, and that is it makes a difference who is president. Biden has already nominated as many minority women to be judges over the last 4 months as Trump had confirmed in 4 years. The Attorney General reversed a Trump-era immigration ruling that made it all but impossible to seek asylum because of fears about abuse, home abuse, or gang violence. Attorney General Merrick Garland made the decision as one of the Justice Department's most significant breaks with the Trump administration. There are people living in situations where a woman comes with her children to try and get into the United States because the local gang wants her daughter, for whatever purposes the gang might decide to use the girl for, or they threaten to kill the daughter unless the son joins the gang. These are the real situations that some disadvantaged people in other nations are facing, and that ought to be a qualifier to at least apply for asylum in the United States. And it makes a difference who is president, because that's the person who appoints the Attorney General. Here's another reason it makes a difference who's president. The Education Department is planning to say that discrimination against transgender students is prohibited under Title IX. This is a total reversal of a position that the Trump administration took. Look, since he was inaugurated, Joe Biden has been trying through a really sweeping effort to rescind, to revise, or to revoke a number of Trump-era policies, especially the ones that rolled back rights for transgenders. Whether it's in the military, or in jobs, or in education. The Department of Housing and Urban Affairs, which he appoints people to run, the Justice Department, which the president appoints people to run, and the Department of Health and Human Services, which the president appoints people to run, they have all issued guidance that affirms the rights of transgender Americans. This is the difference it makes who is president. Now, the Senate approved one judge nominee to the D.C. Circuit, which is the next appeals court that is right under the Supreme Court. You know, we have district appeals courts around the country. The Ninth Circuit is the one that California is in, along with the other western states. And all of those circuits, the judges on those federal benches are certainly ripe to be plucked and nominated to the Supreme Court. But the D.C. Circuit particularly has that distinction, partly because the D.C. Circuit is where all cases that are appealed that have to do with government laws, regulations, where the government is what's being sued. Those go to the D.C. Circuit, and those are the kinds of cases and the kind of experience that makes a big difference when people get on the Supreme Court. this woman, who they say is a prime candidate for the Supreme Court, she was confirmed by the Senate. Her name is Ketanji Brown Jackson. She's replacing Merrick Garland on that court because Merrick Garland is now Attorney General. But if you'll recall, in that seat on the D.C. circuit is where President Obama named Merrick Garland as somebody he wanted to appoint to the Supreme Court. So even though she was just approved for the D.C. circuit, that doesn't mean that she might still not be nominated on the Supreme Court. And for what it's worth, this is a brilliant, sterling reputation, African-American woman who will now be sitting on the D.C. circuit. And just as some comparison to make my point that it matters who's sitting in the White House, 65% of Trump's judges were white non-Hispanic men. So, duh, it makes a difference who's president. Now, I want to give you a small example of what I mean by disinformation, where it is a deliberate skewing of reality. The Republicans have been making the claim in trying to run against Democrats that Joe Biden, regardless of what he says about nobody under $400,000 a year is going to have their taxes raised, they're saying that the Biden plan, his budget, would raise taxes $28,000 a year per household. Why is that disinformation? Because the Republican Senatorial Caucus calculated the total budget proposals divided by the total number of households. And they came up with this average that every household would have to pay $28,000 more in taxes. That is deliberate misinformation because it is not taking the reality of where the tax raises would hit and is merely dividing the whole budget against the whole number of households and saying, well, if he's going to find a way to support that, he's going to have to tax every household $28,000. Biden has made it clear no additional taxes on incomes under $400,000 a year. But the Republicans are sending out, the president's budget will increase taxes roughly $28,000 per household. Do you support paying more taxes next year? This is what is known as disinformation. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. You're listening to iHub Radio, and stick around because the seven industries that are the most desperate to get new workers is coming up when we come back at the top of the hour.